The 26-year-old Phoenix, Arizona medical secretary was arrested and tried, of course, and it was proved, incredibly, that she had packed up her friends and taken them among her luggage aboard a Los Angeles-bound train. But as the two trunks were unloaded from the baggage car at its destination station, the porter noticed blood seeping from one of them. Railroad authorities promptly discovered the two non-paying passengers, and so, in October 1931, all those many Halloweens ago, was born the real-life legend of Winnie Ruth Judd, the trunk murderess. But was she? Even today, historians and criminologists and psychologists debate the extent to which Winnie Ruth Judd was involved, but what is inarguable is that Winnie, who might have been hanged, was sentenced instead to life imprisonment in the Arizona State Hospital for the Insane at 24th Street and Van Buren in Phoenix, Arizona. That ought to have been that. And yet it was here, in this state mental hospital, that the final mystery in the twisted case of Winnie Ruth Judd would arise. For that facility, despite all of its scrupulous security, could not contain her. The first time she escaped, it was presumed a fluke. For indeed, the hospital was teeming day and night with vigilant personnel. The doors and the windows were always, I mean positively always, locked. Winnie's second breakout drew greater attention, greater concern. Her third escape and her fourth escape threw hospital administrators and Phoenix newspapers into a panic. Quite in fact, convicted trunk murderess Winnie Ruth Judd escaped from the Arizona State Hospital for the Insane a total of seven times. The seventh and the last time, living by her wits, she would remain on the run for more than 6 years. Winnie was released officially in 1972, after 40 years of often unsuccessful incarceration, the age of 66, and she passed away quietly after living 26 more years under the assumed name of Marianne Lane. That was October 23 of 1998, when she was 92. Yet that one last piece of the puzzle called Winnie Ruth Judd, she almost took with her to her grave, and she would have, except for the discovery of a round black lacquer box, which she kept on her nightstand. Even all of those years in the state mental hospital, she kept it on her nightstand among various personal effects. The box's lid Winnie had secured innocuously with a little cellophane tape. And inside the box, which she had enigmatically, even daringly called her survival kit, was a combination money clip and a change purse inscribed with the faded words, Souvenir of Florida. Florida is misspelled. Go ahead and pry open that little money clip and take a peek behind it. For there, in a teensy little space barely big enough for it to hide, is the secret of the amazing escapes which had perplexed the hospital staff and compelled one frustrated newspaper editor to demand that the state construct a special dungeon which would secure Winnie Ruth Judd. And yes, I do mean to say that all of the while the dreaded trunk murderess was a guest of the state of Arizona, a flight risk patient in an absolutely secure mental hospital, she possessed a small gift from an admirer whose name will never be known. A key to the front door. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL, brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local, reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
All right, we're back. Darsha, are you back? Maybe not. We might have lost Darsha.
I am.
Oh, she's still here.
And I've changed locations. Hopefully it's not too much background noise. Welcome back, Kenny Enney, Darsha Stebbins here on Call-In Open Mic Friday. So please feel free to call in 238-KPRL, 238-5775. Because we are talking about some of the global elections, I wanted to give some of the Slow County results. They have been certified in our county, but then it goes to the state. Secretary of State will certify on or before December 12th. So I don't expect that there will be before December 12th. So we'll say December 12th. And where we're at statewide was a yes on Prop 50, 64.4%. No is 35.6%. And in our county, it's about 10% less than the state. So countywide, 54.7% and 45% for no. So about 10 percentage points lower than our state. What's interesting is you know, congratulations, I guess, are in order to Low County for being the fourth highest percentage of voter participation. And we tend to have one of the higher voter participations in the state, and I have some theories about that. But nonetheless, Kitty, when you were asking me what you thought my results were going to be based on Republicans and Democrats,
I have them written down right here.
Okay, tell me what they are.
All right, so Darsha predicted 65% total turnout, 55% Democrat turnout, 60% GOP turnout. I had a 60% total turnout with a 60% Democratic overall participation and 55% GOP overall participation.
Well, let's bump that up by about 18 points.
Well, it wasn't that much. So, it was about 10 points, right?
Well, what I was trying to say is that I had about two-thirds, so about 66% voter participation based on the reports of what ballots had come in on election night and what was still to count. And so on election night, there were still 40,000 vote-by-mail ballots and provisional ballots that needed to be counted over the next 28 days to finish counting. And by the way, our county, again, was one of the second-to-last or third-to-last county to finish counting ballots. Even in Shasta County, they were participating in a hand count of the ballots before they went through the machine. It's great that they're developing and showing that, yes, in fact, it can be done. But it still doesn't address the voter rolls and who's on the voter rolls and how many active voter registrations are still out there that perhaps are being sent to ballot to out of state, out of county, ineligible voters, et cetera. So I want to see the voter rolls cleaned up. And but back to the percentages. So in our county, San Luis Obispo County, Republicans, well, there were about 68%, a little over 68% Republicans that voted. So when everyone's disparaging Republicans, saying, you know, they're not getting out to the vote, that's true. There were almost 19,000 or so that did not participate, that did not cast a vote. And the Democrats came out, and they had 73% voter participation. So where the swing is in the no party preference and the other alternative parties, you know, where there's fewer numbers in the party, but the no party preference people, about 51% cast a vote for Prop 50. So it was clearly a very, very partisan measure, the Proposition 50 redistricting, where the Republicans had the most to lose. And Republicans, currently we've gone through the numbers, but currently there's 9 congressional seats out of 52. And so that are Republicans from California. So what was being threatened and what possibly will happen with the yes on Prop 50, quote, passing, that we'd end up with 4, maybe 5 Republican congressional seats still in all of California. So millions of Republicans being, quote, represented by only 4 or 5 Republicans in Congress. So, Kenny, what's happened with the Supreme Court about the Texas redistricting case that supposedly Proposition 50 was put on the ballot to
counter,
counteract the Texas redistricting case? So,
To refresh everybody's memory, just before Thanksgiving, when were we on last time? It was just before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But the the Fifth Circuit, or no, I think it was just a federal district judge, had put a stay on the Texas state legislature's redistricting plan. And there were a lot of protests. As we mentioned, the one conservative justice or judge on that panel wrote a pretty scathing dissent of over 100 pages. And Hans von Spakovsky predicted that the case would be reversed, which it was as of yesterday. The U.S. Supreme Court, with Judge Alito just being the decider, is allowing Texas to go ahead with its redistricting plan. And if I remember the dates correctly, yesterday, or maybe it's today, maybe it's the 5th of December, the candidates can start submitting their paperwork, which was why the state of Texas asked for an expedited review. So as long as that decision remains in effect, it still looks like, you know, everything else sort of being a wild card. But if you look at just the numbers from around the country of which states have entered into the redistricting wars, it looks like the Republicans will maintain a slim majority in the House. But as I always remind people, leave it up. Never underestimate the ability of the Republicans to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. So hopefully they don't mess this up. There is still the challenge to Prop 50, and that challenge is based off of the accusation that the California state legislature specifically used race as a justification for some of the map.
And in some of the Supreme Court, even in the dissent, that it was determined that, or what they were describing was that it was likely racially based. And then there were also, you know, the counteract from California was that, oh, no, it's not racially based. It's based on, you know, that Texas was being partisan. So in a way, it's kind of like pick your poison, you know, was it racially based or not? Was it partisan or not? But either way, how it was worded on the California ballot, how they went through the process was not a democratic process to get it onto the ballot to begin with. So I expect that there will be more challenges. And just the fact that you have millions of Republicans in California that are now possibly only represented by four. And I think Daryl Issa was one of the first who says now he's considering running for a Texas congressional seat.
Yeah, he was on, since you're traveling and you probably couldn't hear it, but he was on the radio earlier during the news break saying that he is not going to run for Texas. He's going to stay in San Diego. And he's, you know, I have to say it would be quite the coup to get rid of Daryl Issa in San Diego. Mm-hmm. He is kind of an institution, mm-hmm. especially with the large defense sector down there. But, you know, we're in uncharted territory in terms of partisan politics in this country right now. But if you look at the rest of the country, there was a great article in the Epoch Times last weekend, and it kind of lays out state by state what the redistricting wars are looking like. And if Texas is overturned and California is not, then the prediction is that the Democrats will have a slight majority in the House starting in 2027. Right now, with Texas being upheld and California in question, it's probably a slight Republican edge. Now, the article also stated that they expect the Calais versus Louisiana case, which I've mentioned before, they think that will impact the 2026 election. And I think that would be interesting to see if Louisiana and the southern states could redistrict that quickly. But we'll see. And if that, you know, if that happens, you know, that it, that could be devastating to the Democrats if because if I remember correctly, it's 18 seats that could potentially be redistricted in the southern states that were affected by the Voter Rights Act. So,
yeah, I think it was anywhere from 17 to 19. So I like the average at 18.
Yeah,
and with the current with some of the Truth Social posts that President Trump has put out recently concerning immigration, concerning the California, the commercial driver's licenses that have been, California has even said, hey, yes, we think there are about 17,000 commercial driver's licenses that have been issued. And I think that what we'll find is that if we're actually looking at citizenship status, and in 2026 will be a federal election, that you have to be a U.S. citizen to vote in a federal election, that there will be many votes that will be, let's just say that I think that the congressional seats will be redone based on citizenship status at some point. And so if citizenship status ends up changing some of the numbers in the congressional seats, that could get very, very interesting.
Yeah, I still think you before said that you think, or you've said before that you think that that could be done by an executive order. I still think that's going to require Supreme Court intervention or Congress.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. What I was saying is that I believe that if there is, if the Insurrection Act, if an Insurrection Act, or if it's declared that we are at war, that then the president has certain authorities in order to be able to say, hey, this is a federal election, and in federal elections, we determine who gets to vote, not the states. So even though state legislation can say, you know, no, we don't want to ask, we don't really care, it is just like the Constitution has to do with citizenship. But so the federal voting has to do with citizenship as well.
Yeah, I think the battle, really, the debate or the legal battles over elections is really going to be, again, you know, understanding the Constitution says that elections are the purview of the states. The intent of that, I think, was how the elections were going to be conducted, not who could participate. And so I agree with your point. I think the states have taken it upon themselves to say, well, we can decide who gets to vote. And I don't agree with that. And I think that, you know, ever since the 15th Amendment, I think it's been pretty clear that the federal government's going to determine who has the right to vote and who does not have the right to vote. And that, I suspect, is going to be the battle going forward. And if places like San Francisco want to allow non-citizens to vote in their local elections, then they have to print out separate ballots for that, and it will cost them more money. But I still, you know, going back to U.S. Congress 1866, you know, immediately following the end of the Civil War, when you had, you know, people like Alexander Stevens, who'd been the former vice president of the Confederacy, you know, shows up to be a U.S. senator again and wasn't seated. I think that the Congress, collectively the House of Representatives and the Senate, have the right to decide how their body will be elected. So it'll be an interesting fight, a historic fight. So,
what I would be interested in hearing is your perspective as I sign off after the break. I'd be interested in your perspective of the recent principal at the Bastrop School Board. Who reviews the contracts and who makes the decisions as to who gets what payoff, and does a resignation mean something different than a firing? And I'll have to take that off the air, Kenny.
All right.
But also, I know that you recently went to a conference, and at that conference, I'd love for you to share with the listeners what you were learning at that conference and how it affects what we're doing today in the court system and in San Luis Obispo County.
Okay. How much time do you have left? Or are you getting ready to go on the court?
Yes, actually.
You are?
They're staring at me, but...
Okay. All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for calling in. Break a leg. That metaphorically,
right,
not literally.
Yeah.
So.
Of course. Thanks.
All right. So before I'll All right. I'm still endeavoring not to prove Kevin wrong that a trained monkey can work the call board. But I'll focus after at the last segment on local school board stuff. And I'll touch as much as I can on the Principal Fletcher issue. But I really can't get into too much of it because a lot of it is privileged information. But you know, to close out discussions on elections and discussions on Venezuela and some of the international stuff that's going on, I listened this morning and I heard the results of the poll about whether we have the right as a nation to go after drug smugglers. And, you know, having done this for a good portion of my life, when you look at the sequence of events that led up to going after cartel boats, and that's what they are, probably the most important thing that a lot of people probably didn't pay attention to was the designation of groups like Tren de Aragua as terrorist groups. Once you're designated as a terrorist group, you are a target. I'll finish up on that after the break.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with the major averages finishing mixed as investors digested fresh mixed labor market signals for a possible Fed rate cut next week. New data showed an unexpected drop in weekly jobless claims, which hit a three-year low during the Thanksgiving week. However, employers announced over 71,000 layoffs last month, according to a report from the global outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. In the meantime, investors tread carefully ahead of Friday's September personal consumption expenditures report, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. The reading would be the first PCE readout since the recent government shutdown. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Salesforce, and IBM. The Dow decliners, United Health, Amgen, and Home Depot. The Dow down 32 points, the Nasdaq higher by 51, S&P 500 up 7. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
If a Lenovo computer for your business is on your holiday list, don't shop around. Just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com. It's your last chance to get exclusive deals on the PCs you want for your business, like the ThinkPad X9 14 Aura Edition and Yoga 7i 2-in-1. So avoid all that shopping chaos and price comparing, and just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com, where PCs are up to 35% off. That's Lenovo.com. Lenovo.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
All right, let's finish up on discussion about Venezuela. I was listening to the Kevin this morning and Chris and the callers talking about the legality of taking out vessels on the open waters. And there are a couple of key important issues. One, when you are a terrorist organization, you as a fighter do not have the same protections and privileges as, say, a soldier from a nation state, because you don't have the protections of the Geneva Convention. And so the rules don't necessarily apply in the same manner. Now, you also have another set of rules called International Law of the Sea, and it is a law that you have to rescue stranded sailors or rescue anyone from a sinking ship. Now, when you look at these drug boats, are probably being vetted through intelligence measures. When I used to do some of this stuff in a previous life. So you know what boats are going out, and generally they're being tracked from the port of departure, and they're going to go through a series of vetting to make sure that you can look the admiral in the eye and say, yes, this is a target that needs to be destroyed. Now, I want to stress the amount of money and damage that I think is being done to these cartels right now. It's not just Tren de Aragua, but also the Carteles del Sol, which is really an arm of the Venezuelan government. A lot of reports say that Maduro himself pretty much runs that cartel. And I could believe that based off of what I saw 25 years ago with the nexus between the Chavez government and the FARC and the ELN. But when you look at these boats, you've heard President Trump say that every time we sink one of these boats, we're saving 25,000 lives in the United States. Now, by my estimate, doing some quick back of the cocktail napkin math, I estimate that a pound of fentanyl cost $134,883, and that was based off of some open source articles that I was reading, and broke down the amount confiscated and the street value is assessed by law enforcement. I'm assuming that one of these go-fast boats is just carrying a ton. Now, looking at the photos, some of them probably could carry more, but I'm just going to assume a ton. Based off of the street price, every time you take out one of those boats, that's $270 million worth of product that's being vaporized and sent to the bottom of the ocean. Now, my understanding right now is we've sunk about 20 boats since September, and so that's $5.4 billion that has been denied the cartels. And then I think there have been over 100 terrorists that have been killed in the process as well. I always argued when I was down at U.S. Southern Command at the beginning of the war on terror,
And we had to go and brief Rumsfeld, and I had the privilege of getting to brief Condoleezza Rice one time. And U.S. Southern Command and all the combatant commanders being CENTCOM, UCOM, I don't think AFRICOM existed at the time, but we basically all had to do this presentation to Rumsfeld and brief him on what we thought the role of the 9/11 bomber or what the 9/11 bombers were doing in our area of operation and what we thought should be done going forward. And our general, our commanding general at the time was Peter Pace, and General Pace was arguing that, you know, the war on terror can't just be a war in Afghanistan or Iraq. And I felt that he made a very compelling argument as to why focus should remain in Colombia and stabilizing and controlling our hemisphere. And it was based off of the amount of drugs that were being shipped into the United States, which at that point was just cocaine. But if you take it, if you look at the numbers of U.S. casualties since 9/11, since September 11th, 2001, we had 3,000 Americans killed, obviously, in the World Trade Centers, in the Pentagon, and in Pennsylvania. And in the subsequent years, we had, let's see here, I'm looking at my handy-dandy congressional chart. There were 6,967 U.S. servicemen and women that died in GWAT operations, with 52,802 wounded. And then there were 3,413 civilian employee contractors that were also killed in Afghanistan and Iraq, with another 38,000 wounded. So contractors, some of those were foreign nationals. But if we look at the contractor number, the 9/11 casualties, and the servicemen, you're in the neighborhood of about 15,000 U.S. casualties, and probably in the neighborhood of about 90,000 wounded in action. Since 9/11, if you add up the casualties from drug overdoses, and again, 90% of 90+% of drugs coming into the United States come across the Mexican border and from South America. We've had 1.2 million drug overdose deaths since 9/11. I always felt that we chose to focus on or to make Iraq and Afghanistan the priority. I think that we chose the wrong war. Every day, you know, what happens down in Venezuela and Colombia directly impacts what's going on the streets of the United States. The fact that we are putting these people out of business, I think, is long overdue. How many drug overdoses do we have every year in San Luis Obispo County? You look at that versus how many, terrorist attacks we have. This all goes back to the concept of the fourth generation warfare, which I've touched on briefly, which is most of our enemies know that they can't defeat us militarily. They don't want to have to face a U.S. Marine or a U.S. soldier or an Air Force F-35 or a Navy F-35. They know they can't compete against that. So they figure out ways to defeat us in unconventional manners. And drugs is probably one of the best ways to do it. The amount of money that is generated through this drug trade, again, if you look at the fact that we've destroyed 20 boats and that's $5.4 billion, how much is getting through? It's hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue for these cartels. And that hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue, I hate to tell you, but, also goes towards paying off corrupt officials around the world, to include the United States. When I worked down out of the embassy in Colombia just before I was there, there was an Army Special Forces colonel, U.S. Army Special Forces colonel, that was caught smuggling drugs through diplomatic mail. It's a lot of money, and there are lots of small town officials that are being corrupted by this. And the best way to defeat it, in my opinion, is start turning off the spigot and destroying the countries that are supporting this. So that's my spiel on that. And I'll shift gears now, and we can start talking about Paso Robles Joint Unified School District. I'm going to try to focus on positive for once. And so I want to start with this conference that I got to go to this week. And every year you have what's called the California School Board Association, which basically they do a convention every year, and they do it around the state. And the convention is generally a left-leaning convention. The CSBA, it shouldn't be a surprise that the education industry in the state of California is left-leaning. But on the first day, on Wednesday, they had a governor's candidate or gubernatorial candidate forum, and Chad Bianco was one of the candidates that showed up and spoke. And the audience was, man, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 in there in the auditorium. And I was pleasantly surprised at the volume of cheers that Bianco got as compared to Tony Thurman and Villaraigosa and Yee. It was probably 50-60% louder when Bianco said something as compared to the others. Now, one thing that Bianco did say, which I cheered for, but there were a lot of boos, was when they talked about how to fix the public education system in California, he stated his support for school vouchers and school choice. And the left just erupted in boos at that point. But that being aside, it gave me some hope. There are a couple things that gave me hope going forward to next year's election that I want to share with you. Now, prior to going to the CSBA conference, I was invited to participate at the Pacific Research Institute's annual school board conference. And I got to sit down with other conservative school board members from around the state, to include a lot of the school board members who have been passing the resolutions in support of Title IX. We had a great panel discussions with members of the state legislature, members and representatives from the Legislative Affairs Office, and other thinkers and influencers in education and the conservative movement. And the ability to sit and talk with some of the board members that have gone through the process of passing the Title IX resolution defending women's sports, and hearing what they have gone through, I really found quite inspiring. I haven't really felt too targeted or beaten up by what's gone on in this county, but I can tell you some of the ladies that supported these resolutions were viciously targeted. And you want to talk about lawfare. There was one of the ladies, her superintendent brought 9 investigations against her for just frivolous stuff. And the intent was really to drive her off the board. It took a lot of courage on her part to stand her ground. And she was elected in 2022. But by 2024, because she had stood her ground, she was able to rally the community to her side and shifted the board from being a 4-1 left progressive to conservative bend to, by the 2024 election, it became a 4-1 conservative progressive bent, and she became the board president, and the superintendent resigned. The board president, who had also been in cahoots with that superintendent, who still had 2 years left on the board, resigned as well, which gave them the fourth. There were only three up for election in 2024. But the simple fact that they stood and fought is what inspired me. I don't see that anymore. And we need to encourage our kids to do the same thing. We'll be back in a minute.
Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Hi, Lindsay here from K-John's Jewelry Company. For decades, our family has believed in one thing above all else: do right by people. That's why we never discount our jewelry. We price fairly every single day. No inflated tags, no discount games, just honest value and pieces we're proud to stand behind. But today we're inviting you into a new chapter of our story. After many years of carrying extraordinary designers, we feel it's time to create jewelry that reflects our vision. Designs made by us, for you. To make room for our new original K-John's collection, we're doing something very special. We are liquidating our entire current inventory. This isn't a marketing event. This is our way of saying thank you to a community that has supported us, trusted us, and grown with us for generations. We want you to have the opportunity to bring home something beautiful at a price that truly reflects our gratitude. We're excited for what's to come and honored to take this next step with you. December 2nd through Christmas Eve, K-John's Jewelry Company, from our family to yours, thank you.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
All right, we're back. Continuing on from where I was, what I'm impressed with is the fact that there are fighters still left in the state. And getting them to, better showcase their fight is what I'm hoping is going to happen. I mentioned the one board member who stood up against 9 investigations from her superintendent and board president. There's another board member down in Southern California that's facing a $15 million lawsuit because we have to fill out these forms, these declarations every year on what is considered gifts. and she failed to declare something that was probably less than $100 or so, a dinner or something. And because she was under such scrutiny by the left in Orange County there, they brought a suit against her. And she's standing her ground. She's not backing down. But they basically said, hey, if you resign, we'll drop the lawsuit. And her attitude is, bring it on. We have you know, signs of courage here in our own community as well. I want to read an email that I got from a proud family, and it was a copy of an email that was sent from an eighth grader to the principal, Lewis Flamson. And it says, "Dear Dr. Duncan, I am protesting about LGBTQ+. In seventh grade, I had to learn what every letter of the LGBTQ means. It was an uncomfortable experience and just wrong. I hope this does not happen this year because people can identify as what they want, but you can't make me participate. It is also morally wrong for a biological boy who identifies as a girl to be in the girls' restroom or locker room, and the same for a biological girl to be in the boys' restroom or locker room. Also, placing tampons in the boys' restroom is just mind-blowing. Have you noticed that 100 years ago, this was not a thing? It is mind-blowing and unacceptable. This is what society has come to." That was from an eighth grader at our junior high. So we've got the girls that have been on the air before and have stood up at the board meetings and spoken truth to power. And fortunately now we've got some younger kids as well. This problem is not just a high school problem. I hate to tell you, it's also in the junior high. And I've also been told it's in the elementary schools as well. But the important thing is people are starting to speak out. And all it usually takes is just that one person to stand firm and set the example. And then other people will join them. And I'm hoping that, you know, here in the next couple of months, beginning of the year, we're going to see more and more of these kids stepping forward. And this is where it's going to take kind of a mind shift for a lot of the community. You know, we've all been conditioned, normal Americans have been conditioned not to get in trouble at school. Well, I want these kids to speak truth to power, which means they're going to probably get in trouble in school. We got a caller. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Kenny. You know, there was a very popular news reporter for KSBY, a female, and her husband got caught taking a leak down in Cal Poly, and they cited him for indecent exposure, and he pled guilty because he thought it'd just go away. Before it was over, because all the press got in it, Karen Gray had to resign, and they both moved out of state. But he was arrested for indecent exposure. Why aren't these kids being arrested for indecent exposure?
You got me. I think if there was a will and a desire on the part of not only the school bureaucrats, but also law enforcement, I could think of several things that I could think of several things that I could charge kids with, boys with. One of the things that I've started talking to parents about, the parents of these girls, especially after the last board meeting, is I think this has gone beyond a civil rights issue. In some cases, the stories I'm hearing, I believe that it's also intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Definitely.
And
civil action on that.
Correct. But some of the things the girls are telling me, I honestly have to stop them and ask them if they're trying to, you know, jerk my chain or you know, if they're telling me the truth, because it's unbelievable in my mind that, you know, this is what we have devolved to, and we're endangering not only their physical safety, but their mental and their emotional safety as well by allowing this to happen.
That's right.
And it's not just the girls; it's also the the kid with gender dysphoria. I think, you know, we are not helping them either. This thing is just fraught with all sorts of dangers. And the fact that, you know, the kids are now starting to speak up gives me encouragement. You know, our board will, you know, keep their head buried in the sand as long as they can. But I'm hoping that by next summer, you know, things will change. And that was one of
The superintendent told me they didn't receive any complaints. Then they started receiving complaints and nothing changed.
Well, I can't remember if you were at the last board meeting, but at the last board meeting,
I deliberately boycotted it.
She basically admitted that there's a problem. She confirmed what the young ladies had been saying and confirmed that there was a biological boy that hangs out in the girls' bathroom or locker room. And I learned a new term, which I had never heard before, which is gender fluid. And we have individuals in our school system who are boys 1 minute and girls the next. And I don't see how that can function in normal society without endangering the mental and physical safety of these girls. It just blows my mind that I'm having to argue about this. So,
indecent exposure and voyeurism are both crimes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll let you go.
All right. Thank you. But moving ahead, and you know, some of the positives coming out of this conference I had or attended in Sacramento, it was put on again by the Pacific Justice Institute. You can look up some of their work online. Lance Azumi was the master of ceremonies, and he's a fairly well known conservative educator. But looking forward in the next couple of months, there are a couple of Supreme Court cases that are going to be looked at. And the Supreme Court agreed to take two cases, one from Idaho, which is Little versus Heck Cox, and that was the one where you had the biological boy with gender dysphoria who wanted to run on the girls' track team at one of the Idaho universities and was denied because of the Idaho law. He tried to get the case dropped because it looked like the Supreme Court would take it, and the Supreme Court did take it. That's going to be combined with another case out of West Virginia, which basically is almost the identical case. And so right now, it looks like this case will be heard sometime the end of January, the beginning of February. But those school districts in the state of California that have written those resolutions and passed those resolutions protecting Title IX and girls' rights, they're all writing amicus briefs to support Idaho and West Virginia. And so there's a growing number of them. There were some other, I got to sit and talk with one of the board members from Kern High School District, and we talked at length about what the thought process was and you know, the deliberations that went on in order to pass their resolution. And what it really boiled down to was what allowed him, he was a pretty conservative guy, Christian, but he had to convince the moderates on the board. And what really started to convince the moderates was the fact that more and more private schools were refusing to compete against high schools that had males on the female teams. And we have that in Paso Robles. We have males that are competing on female teams, and then we also have our own females that have been defeated by males on other teams. And this shouldn't be so hard to undo as it is. But I'm hoping that we'll continue the fight. We will be back next Friday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. That's a good one.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.